Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street, it's a football Friday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158. And that free Odyssey app, 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in, 855-212-4227. And you could, as always, follow me on the good old cesspool of Twitter or on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Whole lot to do today on the first Football Friday of the year. Ryan Horvat from BetQL will stop by each and every Football Friday to give us three NFL picks, three college picks, coming up 20 minutes from now at 6:20 p.m. Eastern, 3:20 p.m. Pacific. And then later on in the show, in the 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time hour, we will have our picks as Escargot is on the line. Hickey's biggest fear, eating some snail. If Hickey loses the picks, he will devour some escargot. And I think if I lose the picks this year, I have to eat. What was that that you got me when you went out to Arizona? It was a lollipop. And what was in the lollipop, actually? Hot Take Hickey, who, by the way, producing this extravaganza for the next 4 hours, is no other than Hot Take Hickey. What's in that lollipop that is in my locker?
A scorpion lollipop.
Ooh. How do you think a scorpion lollipop is going to taste? You got that for me in August, right?
Yes, sir.
So September, October, November, December. How do you think that's going to taste in 5 months if I have to eat that? You think that will age well?
I'm assuming they wasn't exactly pressed and made when I went there in August, so it's maybe sitting out there for a little bit. So it could be, you know, maybe it ages well. Maybe scorpion's one of those foods that with time, like wine, it gets better.
I feel like PETA's going to call us to try to put an end to these picks with the scorpion and then also the snails as well. So we'll see. All righty. So we have an action-packed show today. Hickey and I will be going up against one another all throughout the year for picks. But I don't know about you, Hickey. I didn't get much sleep last night because I was buzzing off the game between the Detroit Lions and the Kansas City Chiefs, where the Lions prevailed by 1 point. You just wake up today and there's a different energy. There's a different vibe. Where, don't get me wrong, I love college football. Week zero had no juice. Last week was fun, especially with the Colorado story with Coach Prime. LSU and Florida State ended up being a stinker where we thought it was going to be a classic down-to-the-wire game, and Mike Norvell, friend of the show, just blew out Brian Kelly and the LSU family with the LSU Tigers. But now, when you have back-to-back days of college football and just doing what we do best, sitting on the couch, eating a lot of food, placing our bets on Saturday, and watching all the college football with two really fun games this weekend in Colorado, Nebraska, and then also you have Texas and Alabama, and then we get to do it all over again on Sunday, except this time in the professional world with the first football Sunday in the NFL. It just presents a different vibe, and it makes you get through the week a little bit easier knowing what we have here, Hickey, at the end of the week on Saturday and Sunday to wrap it up. And these next 4 or 5 months are my favorite 4 or 5 months of the year. And I say this each and every year. I don't want to sound like Mike Francesa here, but the season starts, and then the next thing you know it, in a blink of an eye, we already have a national champion in college football, and then about a month or two later, we have a Super Bowl champion in the NFL.
Oh, I'm very excited. Let's go. Let's go. I was fired up last week, fired up this week. It's great to have actual games of meaning back on our TV screens.
Can we get a little juice from you, like right out of the gate? There's a signature Hickey, let's go. Like when Tom Brady used to say, let's bleep and go. Usually I hear a little bit more intensity. You get the Hickey grunt. You get the bizarre scream as well. Can I get you a little fired up out of the gate when you say let's go instead of that lame pedestrian let's go that you just gave me a few seconds ago? Did you hear me say Football Friday like I was an opera singer? I brought the juice. I brought the energy out of the gate. Where were you at a few seconds ago.
I'm here. I'm juiced up, ready to go.
Come
let's
on.
Go.
No.
Let's
like,
go.
I want the hickey. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah.
That's like deep in the reserves. That's a big game, special
so
moment. I'm not going to fake it for the folks. I can't do it. It's just that right now, the engine's not revving.
Let me tell you, I'm not mad at you. I'm just disappointed in Hot Take Hickey. By the way, where's your sounder? I've said Hot Take Hickey now 7 times out of the gate, and I didn't even get a sounder there.
Hot Take Hickey.
But anyway, let's start with last night. So you could go from the Lions angle of this or the Chiefs angle of it. Let's start with the Lions because it's more positive. That's a statement from Detroit last night. Because there was many moments in this game where you were thinking, oh, Detroit's not ready. Or, oh, here we go, it's the same old Detroit Lions. And when you had back-to-back decisions by Dan Campbell, who started the game super-duper aggressive, and then later on in the game, he got conservative, where you had 2 drives back-to-back of 4th downs, and you didn't go for it, and you punted the football back. At that moment, when they were able to survive and they get the ball back, I'm saying, and I tweeted this out, if the Lions are different, they would go on a drive here. After those 2 punts and they allowed 2 field goals and Kansas City took a 20-14 lead. When the Lions got the ball with about 12 minutes or so to go in the 4th quarter, I tweeted out, if the Lions are truly different, they go march down the field, matriculate the ball, if you want to use an old school football term, down the field, and you go get a touchdown. Not a field goal, a touchdown. And there was a moment on that 3rd down where it's 3rd and long, where everyone's thinking, up, it's the same old Lions, they're not ready for the moment. And then Jared Goff, with ice in his veins, boom, to Reynolds for 18 yards on 3rd and 12, move the chains, 1st down, and then shortly after that, you have the David Montgomery touchdown to make it 21-20, and that ended up being the final score. And I know we'll get into the Chiefs in just a second. They had opportunities. Lions, right, turn the ball over on downs where Dan Campbell then says, okay, I'm going to be aggressive, up by 1, 4th and 2 at Kansas City's 45. Jared Goff didn't get the job done. Ball gets batted down, I think, at the line of scrimmage. And then it's like the Chiefs get the ball, and everyone with 2 minutes and 30 seconds left, even when the Chiefs' offense was just at a brutal spot in the game, everyone in America, even if you're a Lions fan, you're thinking Mahomes is marching right down the field. And bare minimum, all you needed was a field goal. You didn't even need a touchdown. It's a 1-point game, 2.5 to go, and you're getting the ball at Kansas City's 45? You're thinking, absolutely, if you're the Chiefs, you're getting a field goal and you're winning that game. And the Chiefs started moving in the wrong direction. And sure, on 4th and 25, with 3 timeouts, by the way, Andy Reid's got to punt the ball back. But he didn't do so. Patrick Mahomes, to his credit, made a great throw. And then it was dropped. So when that happened, the Lions then didn't give the ball back and the Lions win. So that's a statement game from the Lions. I like Tirico, but Tirico not even letting the moment breathe. And then right away jumping into, oh, this game has an asterisk because all, you know, Chris Jones didn't play, Travis Kelce didn't play. Like, that's ridiculous. Let the Lion fan, the long-suffering Lion fan who has big expectations this year, enjoy that moment. And that's a game. Hickey called it a must-win. I rolled my eyes. But that is a game that you felt like you had to win to make a statement on a national stage that after starting off 1-6 last year and only losing 2 games down the stretch, that things are different in Detroit. And in a weak NFC, with only the Eagles and the 49ers right now being viewed as Super Bowl contenders, in a division for the first time in forever feels like it's open. I know the Vikings won last year, but Rodgers no longer there. People expect the Vikings to regress. I still think they're winning the division. Lions, a lot of people's pick to win that division. Bears not ready yet. Packers, we'll see what happens with Jordan Love this weekend without Christian Watson. So that's a big test up against the Bears. But this was a summer where a lot of people were optimistic and high on the Lions. And after week 1, they showed you that that optimism was valid. Was it a perfect game? No. But you don't get style points in the NFL. You just have to win the game. And the Lions did that last night. So that's the Lions side of it. The Chiefs side of it, If you are a talk show host today and your lead is, can the Kansas City Chiefs win a Super Bowl this year after losing on opening night? You're the biggest idiot, moron, and dope and lazy talk show host in the country. As long as Patrick Mahomes is healthy, as long as Patrick Mahomes is on the field, you have a shot to win a Super Bowl this year. And look at it this way, too. Kansas City's offense and the wide receivers were brutal. They couldn't even catch a cold last night. And the Chiefs still only lost the game up against a good team in the Detroit Lions by 1 point. So I don't want to hear from the media today or from pundits today, oh, the Chiefs are vulnerable, the Chiefs can't win. But something that did surprise me from the conversation in the last 24 hours is that how many people, their reaction from that game last night was, what a massive win for Chris Jones. Now, I'm not undermining the importance of Chris Jones to the Kansas City Chiefs. He's a top three player for the team. I know that Chiefs defense wasn't awesome last night, but if I would have told you that the Chiefs defense would have only allowed 14 points before the game started, you would have said, how many points did the Kansas City Chiefs win by? And I know the Lions scored 21, but one came off a pick six, which wasn't even Mahomes' fault, because Kadarius Toney, which, by the way, Kadarius Toney, young joker, let me call you by your rap name that you like to go by. All offseason, it seems like that idiot was sliding into people's DMs and fighting with fans. I know he had a good Super Bowl with the touchdown, the punt return, all that. But to talk that much smack in the offseason and then all you did was drop the ball left and right, it was embarrassing last night. And he's the reason, I hate to say like one player's the reason, but he's the reason they lost the game. But I go back to my Chris Jones point. So many people today, and it's kind of stunning to me, saying, big win for Chris Jones last night. Big win for Chris Jones last night. The defense only allowed 14 points. My biggest takeaway from that game last night, when you get into Travis Kelce and Chris Jones, is what this offense looked like without Travis Kelce. Because remember, Travis Kelce, last year when you had Tyreek Hill and all the questions, can the Chiefs win without Tyreek Hill? You saw, which you already knew the importance of Kelce, but it doubled down the importance of Travis Kelce to that offense. And last night, it triples down on it. Because if Travis Kelce's on the field last night, in a close game that this is, you know he's going to get in the end zone. Or you know he's going to have a big catch that gets him into field goal range. That would have won the Chiefs the game. So going into the year, especially with the Chris Jones contract situation not getting resolved, and then right before the start of the season, you have this knee injury by Travis Kelce, I think there was starting to become a debate. We all know Patrick Mahomes is number one in the Chiefs organization. But in terms of being the most valuable player to the Chiefs winning another Super Bowl, who was 2 and 3? And if you would have told me before the game last night that it was Chris Jones, I wouldn't have said you're stupid, because Chris Jones is their preeminent defensive player. But last night, the Chiefs' defense was good enough. Wasn't great, but it was good enough to win the game. And without Travis Kelce being there, it was one of those situations where you once again got to see the value of Travis Kelce. So when you look at 1, 2, and 3 in terms of importance to the Chiefs winning a Super Bowl, 1, it's Mahomes. 2, it's Travis Kelce. And then 3, it's Chris Jones. So, Hickey, I hope you're still there after whatever sound effect that was that you played, or whatever music that was, as the board, I guess. We had a button on the board potted up. But are you with me here? Where I'm like amazed in the first few hours after the game, how many people, their immediate take that I'm hearing on so many different shows and so many, I've seen from so many different tweets, is, wow, Chris Jones really won last night. If I know that Travis Kelce's already taken care of and he's on a bargain, but my biggest takeaway from the game last night is the Chiefs need Travis Kelce, and I didn't look at last night as a massive win. It wasn't a loss for Chris Jones, but I didn't look at it as if it was a massive win for Chris Jones with his Chiefs defense allowed 45 points. They kept on showing him with those two Soprano-looking brothers sitting right next to him in the luxury box.
I mean, look, honestly, not that it, I mean, I think you could argue, if anything, his leverage was hurt yesterday more than it was helped, because if you're the Chiefs and you see Travis Kelce getting up there in age, you guys start to wonder now going forward with Mahomes already locked up, who's he going to be thrown to if Kelce now starts to kind of, I think he's 33, as he starts to get older. It's like one of those where you need a succession plan. So at receiver, at tight end, somewhere. And right now, if you're the Chiefs, are you going to lock in Chris Jones to $30 million a year? Are you going to try to use that to try to get a receiver or two, a receiver and a tight end, to pair with each other so that if Travis Kelce gets hurt, this doesn't happen again? And when he starts to inevitably decline, you can have a situation you go into a year where you're not looking around saying, oh my God, who are we throwing to?
Now, you do a show later this evening, starting at 2 a.m. Eastern to 6 a.m. Eastern. I'll give you a little plug right there. The Hot Take Hickey Show. I mean, the Ryan Hickey Show. Oh, wait, what is it? The Hick at Night?
Hick at Night. Night spelled N-I-T-E.
Sorry. There's so many different names for this show that have changed throughout the years, or throughout the year, that I lost track. You're not going to be, though, one of these stupid talk show hosts that lead the show saying the Kansas City Chiefs are in trouble after one game, correct?
No, not at all.
Okay. Just making sure. Not at all. If so, I would have stayed up till about like 2:30 a.m. and then would have called in and would have yelled at you. Anyway, who is more important to the Chiefs winning another Super Bowl this season, Travis Kelce or Chris Jones? Hickey, you usually have a good understanding of the way that our audience thinks. What do you think the breakdown is of the percentage, Travis Kelce to Chris Jones?
Oh, I would say people are fiending after last night. I would say 73% Travis Kelce.
Which is an interesting way, because we just talked about how it feels like so many people are talking about how this is such a big win last night for Chris Jones. So that really wouldn't reflect that number then on the Travis Kelce front if it's at 73%.
I feel like a lot of the talk yesterday was Kelce and their dropped passes from the receivers.
Which
that
is
was
weird.
First and foremost.
Because on my timeline, it was all Chris Jones, Chris Jones, Chris Jones immediately after the game. But on Twitter right now, it is a big runaway Travis Kelce. 86.3% wow. On a Twitter poll.
Yeah.
So maybe some people started to settle down and calm down with the hot takes. And you usually know how the hot take game works. And then, like, later on the afternoon today, it started to shift back to Kelce. But yeah, 86.3% say Travis Kelce is more important to the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl this year. 13.7% go with Chris Jones. We'll take a break. We'll do some gambling picks next. College football, NFL, with Ryan Horvat of BetQL. It is the Zach Gelb Show on a Football Friday.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. First Football Friday of the year. And joining us every Football Friday right here on CBS Sports Radio is one of our betting experts from BetQL, BetMGM Tonight, good friend of the show, someone that would used to hate that I was on CBS Sports Radio because he wanted his own show. Now he has his own show, and that is a dear friend in Ryan Horvat. Ryan, how are you?
And Zach, this isn't even pandering, man, because I'm on for the season again, season two together. But I think you're the best interviewer in the game now that Stern is washed up, especially. I mean, every week, man, I'm on social media. You're interviewing Coach Prime right before the big game. You get everybody. So I'm so glad to be back. You're the best in the business. Never again will I hate.
Wow. That's some serious praise. Let me tell you, whatever Mitch Rosen is paying you there at BetQL, not enough. The price just went up after that. Holy smokes. Very nice words from Ryan Horvat. All righty, let's do what you do best. That's picking games. Nebraska, Colorado, Matt Rule and the Cornhuskers looked like they were getting a victory week one. Then the running back and their quarterback just gave that game away. Now everyone's talking about Colorado, home game for Coach Prime. Shedeur Sanders, awesome. Shiloh Sanders, awesome. Travis Hunter, the running back Edwards was sensational. Colorado is a 3-point favorite and everyone loves the Buffaloes. Are you riding with Coach Prime or are you plusing the 3 points with Nebraska?
All right, so I had to take the points with Nebraska out of principle just because this is a huge adjustment in the market, right? Like, we're looking at 8.5 points. And it makes sense because Nebraska loses their opener. And Matt Rule, like, year one for Matt Rule is usually about just kind of building the culture with the program. Like, Temple, he wins one game. But then by season three, he wins 10 games. You know, we saw the same thing at Baylor as well. But even if you're just trying to build culture, you can't have – you know, Jeff Sims dropping back, throwing 3 picks. You have to run the football. They were running for 5 yards per carry against a pretty good Minnesota defense. And same thing, like if you go back, you watch the Colorado game, and I don't want to take anything away from Colorado and Coach Prime because, I mean, they beat TCU. Granted, that's not last year's TCU team. But if TCU runs the ball and doesn't drop Chandler Morris back 42 times in that game, he throws 2 picks, they probably end up winning that game. I just thought Kendall Briles got way too cute. So I'm going to take the points with Nebraska here as 3.5-point dogs. Maybe wait to get a better number. But, you know, this is a bet where I'm comfortable losing, because let's say Colorado wins this game. They're going to beat Colorado State next week. Then they get Oregon, and then they get Washington. And we might get really good prices with a good Oregon offense and a good Washington offense. And I think they'll beat up on Colorado. So great story, but I have to take the points with Nebraska this week.
Let's go to 3:30 p.m. Eastern. This is a hot seat game between Texas A&M and Miami. Whichever team loses, their fan base is going to be screaming at either Jimbo Fisher or Mario Cristobal. The Aggies of A&M are a 3-point favorite on the road up against the Miami Hurricanes. Where do you go here?
So I really liked Miami last season, and I liked the Mario hire, but I just didn't like the coordinators. Luckily, he got to retool everything. Josh Gattis is gone. And I like Miami offensively with a healthy Tyler Van Dyke. I also think Texas A&M upgrades on the offensive side of the ball because Jimbo Fisher is no longer calling plays. Bobby Petrino takes over. They hang 52 points week one. They were running more tempo offense. Their quarterback, Connor Wegman, could push the ball down the field. So I think we actually get some points in this game. And I think Miami is going to be a little bit better than people expect. Shannon Dawson takes over as OC. Their run game looked much improved. They ran for their most yards in a game since the 2020 season. Henry Parrish had 90 yards, I believe, on the ground. Mark Flesher had over 70. So I think we're going to get some points in this game. Texas A&M's defense, even with all those five stars, didn't look that impressive to me week one. So I think we get the over here, even though the totals went all the way up to 52. And I like Miami, actually, to keep this game close and to go over their win total this season, 7.5.
Let's get to Texas and Alabama. I'm pretty sure last year when it was Alabama going up against Tennessee, Alabama was a 7-point favorite, and Tennessee ended up winning the game outright. Here we go. We remember the game from last year between Alabama and Texas. If Quinn Ewers didn't get hurt, Alabama probably loses the game, and they survived by 1 point. I want to say that game was 20-19 or something like that. Bama, though, 7-point favorite. They are home up against Quinn Ewers, Steve Sarkisian, Texas. Do you go with the Longhorns, or do you go with the Crimson Tide?
I think the best bet you can make in this game is the under, because I think these are two really good defenses. But like you said, Quinn Ewers, if he doesn't get knocked out of that game, they probably win that game, which is crazy because he was also really good in another big game against Oklahoma where he threw 4 touchdowns. But then after those games, he went 4 straight games where he didn't complete 60% of his passes. Against Oklahoma State, he was 19 for 49. Against TCU, he was 17 for 39. And then I had higher expectations for him this season with all five starters back on the O-line, with Xavier Worthy, in the wide receiver room, Jordan Whittington, and they have a really good tight end, Jatavion Sanders, who caught 54 balls last season. But then last week again, man, against Rice, 0 for 6 on passes 20 or more yards down the field. I really like Texas. I think they could keep this within the number, although they did really look like they were missing Bijan last week. I think the play is the under, and with a low-scoring game, I'm going to take the points with Texas. I could see this being a 17-13 type game.
So I know that you're a big-time Packer fan, as Ryan Horvat is here with us from BetMGM tonight via BetQL. No Christian Watson for this game on Sunday up against the Bears. Packers and Bears in Chicago. The Bears are a 1.5-point favorite, and the over-under is 41.5. What is the Ryan Horvat play here?
The play for me is a player prop, and it's going to be A.J. Dillon rushing yards. I actually found some 35.5, some 36.5. I think he's going to be more involved in the offense now that Aaron Rodgers is gone, especially with Christian Watson, who's not only their best deep threat, but he's also their gadget guy. You know, they want to run a lot of pre-snap motion in this LaFleur offense, him on jet sweeps. And now he's already injured. And this is already the youngest wide receiver room in the league. I know a lot of people like Green Bay in this game. That's why it's went from 2.5 down to nearly a pick. I would actually lean Chicago at home. I think Justin Fields is going to have a bounce back year, although he was all right last season. Terrible offensive line. I like the pickups. You know, I like DJ Moore. And last season, you know, I know Justin Fields didn't push the ball down the field in preseason. Everybody made a big deal out of that. But that's not what they really need. They needed Yak. And now you got Mooney. Is the number two. We'll see what they get from Chase Claypool, but I think the Bears might be a little bit better than people expect. I think both teams go over their win total. I lean Chicago, but I'm going to go with an A.J. Dillon prop in this game because I think Green Bay is going to have to run the ball without Watson. You know, if he's healthy, I lean Green Bay, but that's already the youngest wide receiver room, and now you lose your number two. So that's a lot of targets for Romeo Doubs and Jaden Reed, who's a rookie. Just a lot of unproven guys.
Dolphins and Chargers. We expect a lot of points in this one. The over-under is 51. Chargers are a three-point favorite. No Teron Armstead for the Miami Dolphins, their big offensive lineman. Your play in this game between Tua Tagovailoa and Justin Herbert is?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm on an island here because I really like the Chargers, and I'm high on them coming into the season. You know, Joe Lombardi's gone. You bring in Kellen Moore. Last season, intended air yards, Justin Herbert was 41. That makes no sense. He has the biggest arm in the league. And it would help, obviously, if, you know, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams could stay on the field. But now they draft Quentin Johnston out of TCU. He's a 4-3 burner. So I feel good about the offense. And defensively, man, if they could just stay healthy, Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, J.C. Jackson, I think you have to upgrade them. And I'm worried not only about Armstead, because that, you know, you have Tua, who struggles to stay healthy and struggles to stay in the pocket without him. But I'm worried about that secondary. You have Eli Apple coming in. It's a new defensive system with Vic Fangio taking over. No Jalen Ramsey the first couple weeks of the season. I'm going to go with the Chargers, actually, at home.
Wrap it up with Ryan Horvat from BetMGM tonight, who's going to join us each and every Football Friday. We'll give us three college games, three NFL games, and then his best bet right here on the Zach Gelb Show. Let's go to Sunday Night Football. Bum, bum, bada, bum, bum, bada, 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 bum. Between the Cowboys and Giants at MetLife Stadium in the swamps of Jersey, the Dallas Cowboys are a 3.5-point favorite. The over-under is 45, and now Darren Waller, late addition to the injury report, is questionable.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way that the Giants cover, they win this game, and I know it's not really Daniel Jones' game, he's going to have to hit a couple deep shots against this Dallas defense, because I'm so high on Dallas this season. I know famous last words, but just because of the defensive side of the ball. Like, I know Stephon Gilmore's another year older, but he was good last season, and a couple years ago he was the defensive player of the year. I don't know the next time we're going to see a DB win that award. Offensively for Dallas, you bring in Brandon Cooks. CeeDee Lamb proved last year he's a number one, and now Michael Gallup's another year removed from that ACL that he tore in 2019. I know McCarthy takes over as play caller without Kellen Moore, but that might be a good thing because Zeke's gone, and now they're going to run the ball with Tony Pollard, who needs, I know he's, you know, coming off an injury, needs 20 touches per game. So I'm actually going to take the points here with Dallas because they're healthier, and I like them a lot this season. I won't be shocked if they win the NFC.
So you're going Dallas laying the 3.5 is what you're doing.
I am. That's gotcha. One of the favorites I like.
Okay. Now give me the best bet here for Ryan Horvat this weekend. What do you love?
All right, I got two. Really quick, I'm going to take the points with the Browns if we get to three, just because Joe Burrow plays terrible against Cleveland. I really like what they've done defensively this year, adding a bunch on that defensive line. Za'Darius Smith, I think they're going to get after Joe Burrow without having to blitz. If they have to blitz, it's over. Burrow's going to pick them apart. I think the best bet is the Steelers, especially if you could get a three, even with Nick Bosa back. Mike Tomlin at home, 13-4-3 against the spread as a home dog. It's been a wild camp for San Francisco. They trade Trey Lance. The Nick Bosa contract dispute. You have Brock Purdy coming back from an injury. Here's what concerns me. Purdy's not going to beat you with the deep ball. That's the only way you could beat that Pittsburgh defense. He was quarterback 34 last year in air yards intended. 40% of his throws were at or behind the line of scrimmage last season. My hot take is Sam Darnold might have that job by week five.
Wow.
Pittsburgh defense is healthy, and I love what I saw from the offense. I know it was preseason, but my big question mark was can Kenny Pickett and George Pickens get on the right page? Or get on the same page hitting the deep ball down the field. On the deep ball in preseason, you know, 20 yards or more down the field, Pickett was 5 of 7, 2 touchdowns, no picks. And he was, you know, one of the higher rated quarterbacks by Pro Football Focus in the preseason. So I think that should be closer to a pick. I think Pittsburgh might win that game outright. I love the Steelers this week.
You can hear Ryan Horvat Monday through Friday, BetMGM tonight across the BetQL network. Also, I was reading online, new big weekend show to get people ready for football. What's shaking there?
Yeah, the BetQL tailgate kickoff, and that's coming up actually tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern, where, you know, you can find it on the Odyssey app, the BetQL network, Twitch, really good stuff. We take a look at line movement. We have some great guests, and tomorrow we're really going to be paying attention to the weather, actually, man, because I think that's going to affect a lot of these totals.
Ryan Horvat, we appreciate it. We'll do it again next week. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Zach.
There you go. Ryan Horvat joining us right here on the Zach Gelb Show to do a little gambling in college football and the NFL. I sounded really old there when I said do a little gambling. But anyway, very nice compliment by Ryan Horvat. I don't think he was on the hot seat of not maybe making a return for next week, Hickey, but I think he felt a little pressure to give me a big-time compliment right there. Like, outside of what Jim Nance and Kevin Harlan once told me, I think that's like the nicest compliment anyone could ever give me.
Remember yesterday we were talking about if Dak wins a Super Bowl, he's going to get a lifetime contract from Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Horvath, those words to start, may have got himself a lifetime contract on the Zach Gelb show.
Yeah, I was going to say, I may just use that when I go into contract negotiations in a few months with my deal up at the end of the year. Just play what Horvath just said, and we'll find out what the company really thinks of Horvath based off what my next contract is. All righty, rocking and rolling on Football Friday. This is the Zach Gelb show. Are some teams going to regret not signing DeAndre Hopkins? We get to that next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Stream the NFL on Westwood One for free, sponsored by AutoZone. All season long, you can listen to every Westwood One broadcast on the NFL Live on the NFL app by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports or on the Odyssey app. Get in the zone, AutoZone. AutoZone's free battery testing and charging is available for free at your local AutoZone. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply. I was reading via My Sports Update, Ari Muroff does a great job with that account, that DeAndre Hopkins, now the Tennessee Titans, did an interview with GQ Magazine. And DeAndre Hopkins claims that he reached out to the Giants, Lions, Cowboys, and 49ers during his free agency because they were on his list. And DeAndre Hopkins says he never got a call back from any of them. Now, I don't see what the incentive would be for DeAndre Hopkins to lie, but it's kind of tough for me to believe that if he called them, I'm not saying maybe they didn't directly get back to him, but they at least didn't reach out to one of his representatives. We know Joe Shane pretty well, and he's been on this show a bunch. Joe Shane seems like a guy that never leaves any stone, not turned over.
Unturned.
Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't find that there. I guess it's from the screaming of the Football Friday earlier. And that just doesn't pass the smell test here, Hickey, that, like, let's just say for the Giants, that they wouldn't at least give a call back to his representation.
Especially when you look at the team, it's not like they're the Bengals where they have Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd. Yeah. Where it's like, we have a loaded boat of receivers. We don't need another. Giants have a lot of names, a lot of unproven names. They absolutely could have used a guy of Hopkins' talents.
And also, like, you look at the Cowboys, too, are listed here. If he called Stephen Jones or if he called Will McClay or Jerry Jones, like, even if he didn't get to Jerry Jones.
He called Jerry.
You know Jerry's going to call him back.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the AI version of Jerry Jones gave him a phone call back from that creepy video that the Cowboys put out yesterday. Maybe that was Will McClay, or maybe that was just Stephen Jones not wanting DeAndre Hopkins. Like, all right, we're not telling the old man here. And now the old man is probably furious today when he has, what was that, that McGriddle sandwich from Hard Knocks that he would put on 9 pounds of salt on it. But just right out of the gate, Giants and Cowboys, I feel as if, even if they didn't want him, that they would at least have some dialogue, because I don't think there's any harm in having some dialogue to see what the cost was going to be for DeAndre Hopkins.
That's the thing. He came out and at least talked about wanting a high price tag. It doesn't hurt to at least ask, how firm are you on, let's just say, $15 million, right? If you're a team that's up against the cap and don't feel like paying DeAndre Hopkins that amount of money, I don't think it hurts to at least ask. And if he says, I'm firm on it, okay, you tried. You're right. If he's telling the truth, I don't see the harm of just asking, hey, how strong are you in that offer? Because this is only what we can do. If he says, no, this is what I'm taking, okay.
And remember,
calling back.
When we had this conversation, there was three priorities for DeAndre Hopkins. It was winning, contract, and then targets. And I think he valued it from most important to least important: contract, targets, winning. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong in it, but if he was going to take significantly less, no offense, it's not to go to the Giants. I know the Cowboys have a really good team, but it's not to go to the Cowboys. Just on that list, you would think it would be the 49ers. But overall, in totality, the Kansas City Chiefs would have been a great destination for him. Where even if it would have been $6, $7 million a year, you go to Kansas City, you'd be the number one receiving target from a wide receiver. We all know the number one target there is Travis Kelce, but you could say you're the number one wide receiver. And imagine if last night the Kansas City Chiefs had lost the Lions by 1 point without Travis Kelce, had DeAndre Hopkins. We would have all been talking about today, Chiefs win, DeAndre Hopkins going to get himself set up for a big-time contract next year, And he probably would have had like 10 catches last night for 145 yards and a touchdown.
And that, I get injuries happen. That's part of the reason why I said if I'm DeAndre Hopkins, I would have prioritized winning over money first. This year in a one-year deal where the money's going to be limited anyway, I think he would have set himself up for a better future contract next year, 2 years from now, than he is the next time he's a free agent. Because I think it was a two-year deal, right, I believe, in Tennessee. This is probably the last big deal he's going to get. But it's also frustrating, I will say, when he talks about, you mentioned his words, he talked about what? Quarterback who loves the game, like head coach and a great
winning
defense. He talked about everything that associated with winning.
But that happens all the time.
And then I get it, but then his actions say totally different than he just goes and chases the money.
And look at the two teams that ended up bidding for him. It was the Patriots, who I'm a Pats fan. They're not a winning team, but I mean winning team right now is not, oh, you can maybe make the playoffs. You could have this like late case to make a playoff push. I'm talking about winning a Lombardi trophy. You know, DeAndre Hopkins, if the term is just making the playoffs, he's done some winning in his career. He was in the playoffs a few times with the Houston Texans, the Cardinals, right? He had that one playoff appearance too, and then they were a disaster. But it's about winning a Lombardi trophy for him. And I don't crush a player if you go take whatever the richest contract was, because I'd probably do the same thing. And you look at what he ended up doing. He ended up going to Tennessee. Can you make a case that Tennessee makes the playoffs this year? Sure. But I don't believe that we're going to be talking about the Tennessee Titans this year at any point as a Super Bowl contender. Even if they do, I don't want to say the unthinkable, but most of us believe that the Jaguars are going to win that division. And I'm very, very, very bullish and high on the Jaguars this year. Even if, let's say, Trevor Lawrence unfortunately gets hurt, which would be miserable, and Tennessee wins 9 or 10 games and they win that division, even if they won 11 games this year, I still don't believe that we would look at Tennessee and say they're a Super Bowl team, because we've seen this team before be a number one seed and still not get to the Super Bowl. Even a few years ago when they went on that crazy run where they weren't the number one seed and they beat New England, they beat Baltimore, they were in the AFC Championship game with, I think it was a 10-point lead up against the Chiefs at one point. No one still thought they were going to the Super Bowl. So they're one of those teams when Ryan Tannehill is your quarterback. And the last 2 years you drafted Malik Willis and also Will Levis, you have that stench of, we all know that Vrabel's a good coach. We all know you have some pieces on that defense. We all know Derrick Henry's sensational. We all know DeAndre Hopkins is still a really damn good wide receiver in this league. But you still have that stench of, oh, Ryan Tannehill's your quarterback. He's an okay quarterback. He's a good quarterback, but not a guy that's going to ever get you to a Super Bowl.
And not, right, if you're a receiver, look, no offense to Ryan Tannehill, not exactly the first name you're picking out of the hopper to want to catch passes from.
All right, let's just go through this rapid fire. Giants, if this is true, and once again, I'm skeptical on how true this is from DeAndre Hopkins, that he reached out to four teams that are on his list and they didn't call him back. Is that a mistake by the Giants to not find a way to get a deal done with
yes.
DeAndre Hopkins?
Yes.
So you have Waller, who's injury prone. You have Saquon, who's a major piece of that offense. You're banking on like a Jalen Hyatt to break out. You know, the Giants could go back here and maybe trade for Mike Evans in a few weeks if they wanted to. But yeah, I would have further explored it if I was the Giants. How about the Detroit Lions, who won last night? You have Amara St. Brown, who's a stud. And, right, he kind of has taken that Kenny Galladay role. It's either, not Kenny Galladay, Keenan Allen role, where we all referred to for so many years, Keenan Allen is the most underrated wide receiver in football. It's either Amara St. Brown or Terry McLaurin now that everyone says, oh, that's the most underrated wide receiver in the league. Should the Lions have made that phone call?
And this is assuming, right, that Hopkins is standing his ground on his on
yeah,
the terms
like
of the contract.
Like 13, 14 million.
I would say no then. No mistake by Detroit.
Why?
I think they have enough weapons.
Huh.
They have plenty of pieces to spread the ball around, good balance, run and pass. I just don't think that you're going to spend that amount of money on one receiver makes sense.
I just think Jameson Williams is such a question mark that if you're really going for it this year, I would have explored DeAndre Hopkins. What about the Cowboys, who have CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks, and Michael Gallup? Probably not enough mouths to feed there, right?
At that price, no. I would agree.
What about the 49ers? Got Debo, got Ayuk, got Run CMC. You got Mr. Kittle, even though he's questionable for this week. Was that a mistake by the 49ers?
I don't think so. I think they have the best roster in the NFL.
Do you really?
Yeah, they're loaded.
That's not a hot take. I like the Eagles roster, though, better because the quarterback is just such an uncertainty.
It is. Absolutely is.
In terms of the 49ers, like wide receivers, I love A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Tight end, Dallas Goedert's a stud. The running back room I do not love, but if DeAndre Swift's healthy, he could be a productive player. Jalen Hurts an MVP. And then defensively, I guess you could say the 49ers defense is better than the Eagles, but it's not as if it's leaps and bounds better. I think it's slightly better than the Eagles defense. And you give the coaching advantage to Shanahan over Sirianni, but Sirianni was in the Super Bowl last year and Kyle Shanahan wasn't. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will take a break when we come on back. Five questions, five answers on a Football Friday. We call that segment Onside's Offside.